Guys, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Both Sides podcast. Today, we're extremely humbled to have David Maloof in the building.
Thank you for
allowing this first podcast. Is this your first podcast?
It is my first podcast. There's been many for me to do, but like I said, I'm not the one that likes to sit still.
First podcast.
It's always been next time, but you got me. So
let's do it.
First podcast, second photo shoot.
All right, man. Let's kickstart it off. We were just off camera. You were explaining a little bit about your journey. Let's take all the listeners right back to the beginning before you got into real estate, and let's go step by step to the point you're at now.
The journey. So, I wouldn't say I'm the most academic one. Just to sit down and sit at a desk. It's sort of never been my specialty. I've always been the one to sort of go. So. The journey. So I've finished school, went straight into laying bricks. That was my first job, ideally. Laid bricks for about 2 years. And then from doing that, I ended up in personal training. Within the personal training, I was also doing hospitality for about two, three years. And in that journey, the best thing about the hospitality is it's a people skill. You're dealing with people. It's a go. You're not sitting down. So I enjoyed that. Many people, dealing with people.
How old were you then?
I would have been at that time, early 20s.
Yep.
Early 20s. Did that for a period. And then at one point, I'll never forget the conversation. I was away with the family and I sat with Bill.
Where were you at the time?
Believe it or not, it was Fiji.
Fiji.
Because Bill does react the way when we speak about it briefly. This is Fiji, and I was sitting with Bill and I said, look, I want to take it now to the next step. I'm thinking of my career, where I want to go, what I want to do. And Bill was brought up in a way where it was black and white, tough bringing up, sort of pushed back on me as well, which has obviously made me to where I've got to today. And it was a very simple conversation being, look, you do your journey, but you know, don't do it because of me. Don't follow my career thinking there's going to be a step up.
Yeah.
And for me, it was always about, I want to prove a point. And then that's kind of where the hunger really starts, the exciting part. But keeping that in mind, I said to Bill, look, I want to have a crack. So I said, no problem. And the first time, back then, my first proper job was with Brad Pillinger.
Yeah, legend.
You know, great guy, big operator. You know, as we all know, his success has been amazing. I was with Brad at the time, and it was quite funny because he had me more of an admin role. So let's just say that lasted a week. So for me, it literally, I a phone, I was given a desk, and Bill just said, you go. He said, the only way you're going to make it this game is if you pick up the phone and make the calls. You're either going to sink or swim. And then the journey started.
Wow. Well, how old were you then?
I'd have been mid-20s.
Mid-20s.
About mid-20s when I started really focusing. And when I say, well, there's a lot of plays to ideally, but... Ideally, yeah. Mid-20s is when the phone, the desk, and it all began.
Yep.
And what was that like at the time? Were you a lot? Did you enjoy the process or were you just like, gloves on, let's fucking go?
Look, you got to remember, I mean, coming into this industry, you know, I'll give it to Bill. He's done what he's done. It was always Bill's son, right? So just to imagine coming into the game and not an ego thing, but, you know, I'm a personality of my own, right? And I'm thinking it's on. You know, I'm going to explain, I'm not Bill's son, you know, I'm David. I'm going to make a following, I'm going to make a career, and I want to take myself to the next level, to the point where I'm bigger than Bill.
Love that.
And you know, nothing bigger personal between us, right? But in my head, let's go. He loves it, I love it. You know, we're competitive, it's fun. You know, my business partner, Dave Harlan, loves it. You know, he loves seeing us get competitive, you know, in this game for the obvious reason, because you know, it's a win-win situation. But, you know, it's been an interesting journey. I mean, Bill's been a great mentor, but he's taught me the hard way. And the hard way is a simple way. It's pick up the phone and make the calls.
Yeah.
And that's how it all became.
Wow. So,
how many years has it been since you started picking up the phone till now?
Oh, look, day by day, that's me. I mean, I have a pod, I've got a team, but my role, and I'll never change, is making calls. It's just in me, it's just what I do, it's just what I know. I find that this industry is about that. A lot of agents that I deal with, and you know, I speak to the top performers as friendships, as bonds, and we all bounce off each other. And you speak to the main guy, the top performers in your game, they're making the calls.
And at one point, look, I do have a prospector. You know, I've got the business manager, I've got a sales associate. But for me, one of the most important thing is making calls. But I enjoy it. Mm. I enjoy getting up. I enjoy the hunt. You know, I was told years ago by a very successful individual, don't be hunted, go hunt. Mm. You know, and it's true. You know, this game is if you don't have to complicate it, if you want something and you chase it hard enough, it just ends up happening.
So how many calls are you making, or were you making?
I'm at a point, look, I'll tell you straight, from a point of, and you can try me, I'm an early riser.
Yeah.
I don't sleep much. I'm jumping out of bed 5 a.m. every day.
5 a.m.
But you got to remember, for me, I mean, I get to start making calls because I've got clients in London that I'm representing now, for example. So it's kind of, when I jump up, I'm on that phone. But there's calls to make.
Wow.
But it's not a matter I have to, I want to. You know, you speak to my business partner, Dave, it's quite funny, like I'm known for it. He'll get a call at 5 a.m. And he's also an early riser. You know, I thrive off picking up the phone and making a call.
Calling at 5 a.m.
I'm on the phone. I will start. And I'm known for it. I will start making calls. But obviously to people that are going to accept. I mean, I'm not there, you know, giving an anxiety for the obvious reason. But, you know, it's just part of the process for me. It's like be on the phone. And then it just becomes during the day. I mean, look, how many times have you called me? You know, I'll answer.
Every
if you don't get an answer, how quick do you get a call back?
Very quickly.
So it's just part of my process. It's part of just who I am. But that's what's allowed me to do what I've done also.
Wow. So what does the routine look like?
So my day-to-day is I'm up at 5:30 at the gym. Train. From that, home, get dressed. In the office, ideally between 8:30.
Yep.
Ideally 8. Team meeting. What's important? What's priority? What do we need to do? And then from that point, I try to keep my appointments after 11 a.m. I want to be on my phone. So I want to be able to do my call back. So a lot of my business I list is during the process of running. So it's having this conversation. I've been on the Saturday with that person. They remember you, right? Because when you meet people on the Saturday, it's about them liking you. If they like you, they're going to use you if you have track record, right? Ideally. So for me, those calls on a Monday are very important. I'm not the one to say I want to, you know, I'm going to have a Monday off and team make those calls. No chance. I want to be making those calls.
Wow.
So Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, we try to keep it, you know, try it structured, process. So it's always from ideally, you know, 8 a.m. to that 10 period, we're on the phone. And then after that period, it's a matter of appointments, face-to-face, chasing your business, or closing out what we need to close out, etc.
Do you have a deadline of when you stop work?
Short answer is no. I feel that this game, and this same Bill taught me from a young age, accessibility is everything.
Yeah, I remember him saying that.
Right?
Yeah.
You call me at 9 o'clock, you're gonna get an answer. If I'm awake, 10 o'clock, you're gonna get an answer.
Yeah.
You know. So it's not a matter of do I switch off. That's probably one of my biggest weaknesses. I don't know how to switch off.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
A simple answer, ADHD. I mean, it's part of it. Look, I wouldn't change it because for me, my intensity, my work ethic, and me not switching off is what allows me to beat my competitors.
Why are you so hungry? What's your driver?
More, want, chase, the kill. You know, like I said, I've never been the one as an academic individual to sit there and read a book. I've been the one to go chase, physically do something, want to do something. And that's why I love this game so much. It's like there's no blocking on, and I don't mean to go here, of how much money you can make, right? It's the more calls you make, the more you hunt, the more you can make. So for me, you know, I've seen Bill do what he's done. And he got in at 33, 34. I'm 35.
Yeah, wow.
So you know, so for me, there's a journey ahead, but I'm the only one that can make my own journey, right? So for me, the way I look at it is the more you put in, the more you get out.
Yeah.
So the drive for me is I know the end result is going to be big, but during that process, there's only one way to get there.
Well, mate, it sounds like you're very proactive with the kill and doing the work required. in doing that, do you burn out? Are you do you struggle with the fatigue?
Look, can I tell you, it's funny. What actually calms me down is when I go train. So it's interesting. Most people say, do you ever want to relax? Well, relaxing to me is going to the gym and putting in. That calms me here mentally. So, of course, I have my breaks, for sure. Mm. I went away this year. But by the end of it, I was ready to get back. You know, it's this to me is not, it's the lifestyle. It's day by day. You know, I have met so many friends and created some great bonds in this industry through work.
Mm.
Really close people that have come close to me, right, from this industry. So, you know, I've never looked at this, and again, like, and I don't mean Kim referring back to Bill, but, you know, Dad's 69. He's still at work every day. You either love it or you don't.
Yeah.
I love it. I enjoy it. You know, so for me, it's like, people say, Dave, you need to switch off. But why would I switch off something that I enjoy?
Mm.
You know, if you're watching a movie and you're into it, and someone turns it off, what do you do? Mm. You turn it back on. Mm. Same with me.
Yeah.
It's like, don't take it away from me. I enjoy it.
Yeah. I've got some questions around the way that you actually sell these properties. Mm. So one of the big questions I have is, in terms of when you're selling these 20, 30, 40, $50 million plus properties, mm. How do you tap into the international market? Are you advertising on certain websites? Or?
Look, what we found, there are avenues of going there,
mm.
but to be really straight, domain real estate are the two key factors we get the international market from.
Yeah, okay.
You know, look, we have got a following as well, knowing we do the big stuff. Keeping that in mind, I mean, even with the rebrand with Highland Group, you know, the world now knows,
mm.
you know. But more importantly, the client base we deal with offshore, their main resource is domain and real estate.
Okay.
That's what's a lot. There was always other avenues we tried and we tested without getting into it.
Yep.
But the main key two platforms that are offshore are looking at.
Mm.
And when we say offshore, you got to remember, like, a lot of them have been here. A lot of them know. A lot of them have friends here. A lot of them have family. And they do know which platforms to utilize, right? They all are educated enough to understand it's domain, it's real estate. But that's generally our driving factor. I mean, look, I've just launched something in the horizon in Darlinghurst. We've got a buyer's guide of 32 million. It's just under 600 square meters of internal living. It is an unreal unit, right? Mm. It's pretty special. Whole floor apartment, level 40. And yeah, offshore inquiring, but they're all coming from doing real estate.
Okay. Yeah.
So they're pretty much our main. Wow. Main two.
That's a huge listing.
Look, it's unique, it's special, but that's the stuff that also drives me.
When you started your career, were you going into the top end straight away, or how did
definitely
you work?
Definitely not. No, how'd you definitely work it? I remember my first listing to this day. It was a 2-bedroom apartment, Manion Avenue, Rose Bay. I'll never forget it.
How much?
At the time, 600.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. And that came from cold calling. That came from chasing. And I'll never forget, they rang me and they said, look, we're thinking now, we're ready. That feeling, I was like, okay, wow. All it took was follow-up and a phone call.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first, I guess, big listing I ever got to experience, which really gave me reality, it was like, okay, wow, this can be a rewarding game, big time, was 1 Clairvax Road, Vaucluse. Funny enough, I'm actually selling a penthouse flat owner as we speak in Kent Street, the city. And it was a doorknob. I had a client of mine that I actually met when I was working hospitality. And it all comes back. And he said, look, I've got a budget of a certain amount of money. I'm looking for land in Vaucluse. So I did do a lot of door knocking as well. I said, like, just keep it simple, because simple does work. And I was door knocking and door knocking, and I door knocked this one house and I got in. And tried to do a deal with the buyer, because it was exactly what he wanted, knocked down. Didn't end up getting there. I would have been 26. And I'll never forget, I got a phone call from that owner. He wanted to sell his house. We're talking a $15 million listing at that time. And I sold it.
Wow.
And that kind of, what I realized was, you know, process was the same as the process I did for a 2-bedroom apartment. Just a different price point.
Mm.
And it's kind of, you think to yourself, it's actually not, it's the same process. I think where a lot of people get nervous and concerned, they think, you know, it's a $30 million listing, or it's, you know, what's it? Same process.
Mm.
it's just the transparency and the confidence, right? Yeah. And that's a memory that kind of gave me a reality hit of, wow, like, let's go. Like, that's the excitement. You know, you go from selling a two-bedroom apartment and you go door knock a $15 million house and you sell it and it comes back to you, right? But look, I want to go to market. And at that time, the client knows me now, you know, the confidence was there. I'm thinking, I haven't taken on something this level yet, but you just got to back yourself. And years later, that same owner, I'm now selling his property for him in Kent Street as we speak.
Amazing.
But that's what's cool about the game, right?
Oh, yeah, that's massive, eh?
That's what's fun.
So do you cold call door knock?
I door knock.
Yep.
Still to this day.
Yep.
For sure. I think, you know, I think the problem is, and what I see from that looking in, I find this industry, it has changed very quickly, but people have completely forgotten the basics. You know, it's like, I'll take you to my office after this podcast and I will show you my desk is highlighters, a call list.
Yeah.
That's it.
So do you call. Use a CRM?
I've got a database, but I'm allowed to touch the database. So I've got my business manager, so it's all been put in correctly. I keep it simple. I pick up the phone, I make the calls, I just keep it simple.
And what are you saying on these calls?
I'm following up saying, I know where you're, you know, I know the property that you own.
Yeah.
I want to get in front of you. My calls are very straight to the point because that's my personality.
Yeah.
And I think that's also, people like that. You know, people can smell bullshit. And especially at the price point we deal in. You know, if you're dealing with an owner at 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, 40 million, they're educated enough to own a house at that level. They've been around the traps. Pick your battles. I mean, the house we're handling at the present moment in Vaucluse, buyer's guide's 45 mil, right? And an agent called from an office that said, I've got a buyer for your property. Okay, do you know my property? Do you know my situation? Yes. Then that same conversation, he said to the vendor, what are you looking to buy? What do you want? The owner's thinking, my name's been everywhere in the paper. I just settled on something, you know, just under 70 million. You said you've done your homework. Goodbye. That agency, they won't deal with them again. And this is the problem with a lot of agents, right? They don't do your, I mean, the amount of time my family home gets caught, it's hilarious.
Oh, really?
Right, of course. Right, and I respect people out there having a crack. I'm all for that. You know, the work ethic to me is everything, but that's where a lot of people go wrong. You know, this game, if you are transparent and you are straight with people, you will grow a reputation and you'll have a great career. And I think that's where a lot of agents forget. You know, they will tell you what you want to hear. I mean, the amount of business that we've taken of other agents, and they've actually done the conditioning for us, where they've gone and said it's worth 15 when it's only worth 10. You know, and they're all about closing the owner. You know, that's not to me a successful agent. You know, I find an agent that can be straight with an owner from day one, create a strategy. It's like when I had sold for Roxy DeSenko. I didn't agree with the price at the time what she wanted. I told her my honest opinion, what I thought it was. The outcome that she got was great, but at least we had the straight conversation before. And that's how I secured the business, was just being straight with her.
So when you pitched on that business, did you have other agents saying a higher price or agreeing with
them? I was up against four.
Yeah.
And she had an expectation. I said, look, that's top heavy, but I'm going to back you. I told her what I honestly thought. And at the time, I went to market with what I believed it was valued at, right? I'll tell you straight, I saw the value, you know, we're talking 13s, 14s at the time, within reason, 12, 13, 14, with in excess. But you know what, we had buyers on it. And by the end of it, it creeped up to circa 16 million, right? But the best part was there were actually three heads going head to head. And we achieved that price. If I went to market at 15 or 6, we would have fallen on our face. But I was enough at the time to say, well, transparent enough at the time to say, look, I'll back your price. It's a great house, no doubt. But the value is here. And she didn't disagree. And that's why we worked off at a certain price point. And we built and we created an audience. There were multiple buyers running at it. And that's how we ended up at a level of circa 16. Mm-hmm. It was at that time for where it was. Big result.
Wow. Definitely.
Really big result. But we were able to achieve because of the straight conversation of this is the value. And there were buyers at 14. There were buyers at 15. There were buyers at 15 and a half. You know, multiple. Because the process just kept on going.
It sounds to me like you really play to your strength, which is be direct, pick up the phone, and keep it simple. Is there anything else in that menu or recipe?
Follow up. I'm all about the follow up. I call it clockwork. So I have a rule with my team. There's three calls. One in the morning. So if you're trying to get a hold of someone and you don't, one in the morning, one in the midday, and one at night.
Wow. And if they don't answer that day, again?
Three is enough. Three is enough. I'm big on follow up. I find that if you wait for someone to come back to you, you're going to fail. This game, our job, see, look, we're in the service industry. When you go buy a car, let's just say you're spending $20,000 on a car, okay? The service you get is quite good. You walk in, they jump on you. How can we help you? They ask questions. They give you a brochure. Within 2 days, you get a call back. Right? Now, we're in the residential world. You're talking assets of 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, 5 plus, 10, 20, 30. In my opinion, your follow-up should be times 10 better than the way you get service when you're buying a car. So I'm big on good service. I think service is everything. And that's what also creates a reputation. You know, if people have a good experience, they're going to talk about you. Right? And it's what people say about you that creates your journey. Right? If they had a bad experience, what's going to happen?
Yeah, terrible.
Ruins reputation.
In terms of the transition from LJ Hooker to Highland, because obviously Highland never had a reputation or a foothold in the eastern suburbs, how did your clients take that?
Look, one thing I've learned about real estate, they follow the individual. You know, where I go, they'll go. And I knew that. For us, since the merge and from the out looking in, we've now created depth. I mean, you know, in a very humble way, you look at the Wentworth Career, we own it. We have this whole year. We've had the most presence to date. But saying that, it's not even about the depth of just the eastern suburb. You know, we've got the Highlands, we've got Cronulla, and it's just crazy how much crossover we get. And that's what's allowed now for our business, you know, Queensland. You know, there's nothing that we don't take on. And our client base open up the paper and they say, wait a minute, you've got, you know, a house here, you've got a house there, and they see the depth. So the marketplace now know, you know, we're not just the typical prestige Del Bay office. And I look, it's great having a good reputation in the prestige market. But to me, a successful business is a business that takes on everything, right? That to me is a successful business, from 500,000 to 2 million to 5 million plus. You know, I find our business prior had that prestige name, but, you know, we dealt at all price points. You know, right now, my stock list, I've got stuff at 2 million. I've got stuff at 20 million. I've got stuff at 40 million plus. It's a turnover game. You know, I take on everything. It's a numbers game, you know. And as a business, you want to be known as that. Because I find that's a successful business. Because tough times are tough at the lower price point and they're better in the top end, we've got that coming in. So the top end's tough, do you get me? And that's what's also been such a great benefit of the merge of the brand, because also the project division.
Yeah.
You know, we've just secured a project up the road at Rushcutters Bay. You know, there's 75, 80 apartments. It's a big project. You know, we didn't have that space before. You know, now we do. And we're making moves in that project division as well, big time.
What do you think of the project division?
Look, it's definitely a long game.
Yeah.
Very, very rewarding game, but it's a different space. I've got projects that I have currently got on, but smaller. So there's a block of four I'm handling in Bellevue Hill called the Villia Project, in excess of 18, 19 a unit. That caliber, definitely. But I find that you cannot dabble in both worlds. Taking on a block of 50 apartments is a different kettle of fish than running an auction 4-week process. It's a different world. And if you start to dabble in both, I personally wouldn't. I've got an operation where I've got
so much backup with my team now where I'll come in for listing presentation because of the relationship, and it's handed over to the client, and they are, I have not had one complaint, you know, and that's what it's about. You can't expect to take on both worlds.
Yep.
It's two different ball games.
Yep.
So what would your advice be to an agent or a buyer's agent looking to grow their footprint?
Yeah.
Would you be selective in a core area, or would you, because you sell properties from different price points and you've got stuff in Northbridge, eastern suburbs. What would be your advice on that?
Look, my business is very relationship driven. That's how I grew my business, was using my relationships, right? If a new person is coming into a new area, my advice, and they're not relationship driven, they don't know a lot of people, find a patch, work that patch, and become noticed. Become that person, become the advisor. But also go in to give, don't go in to get. You know, if you're starting out the game, and it's a long game, look, I got no patience. I want things yesterday, right? But over time, you've got to remember, it is a long game. It takes time. But if you're consistent and you become the advisor, people will listen to you. But you also have to be knowledgeable. So if this was my first day today and I wasn't from this area, I would find a patch. I would work that patch. Every sale that's just been made, ring the owner, let them know. But you've got to make people feel you're giving them something. And that's where a lot of people go wrong. People ask without giving. Real estate agents got to learn, in my opinion, if you want to start making your name, be that person that they like you, have information to give. Because when you give, at one point you're going to get back. And we know what they're going to give you, right? Their asset. So if I was starting out, I'd simply find a cool area, service it, give information, let them know. And then over time, you start to grow a name. And then it all starts from there.
Yeah.
Ideally.
Do you do many off-market deals?
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
What's your
in process? Terms of off,
yeah, not so much process, but what's the percentage of on-market to off-market?
I'm a big believer in, so I run a stage one, stage two with every process that I run.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, so stage one is EDM, I say EDM database, client base, always. For two things, one is a good chance, you know, like Reco, for example, I'm selling on a property today, Victoria Road, Bellevue Hill. Settlements, as we speak, press settlement. I was running a little bit late, apologies. And that's an asset where I did a stage one. Double digit property. I took one buyer through before going to market, sold it that day.
Wow.
Now, irrespectively, we're always going to have buyers that if you listen to what they want, you can always marry it. So I had a client said, Dave, I'm looking for a 4 to 5 bedroom house near Scots College, livable, secure, traditional house. I think it's perfect. Now, irrespectively, most agents want to take their properties to market, and I do. I'm a big believer. You want to achieve the best price, you have to go public. I'm big on that because you just don't know, right? But the price that I was offered was at a price where the vendor said, let's go. We're running that. I'm not taking the risk. I do more on market than I do off. A lot of agents thrive off the off-market process, but look, in a very humble way, you need to build profile, right? And profile is about having presence. And presence is what's going to create your journey. But also, for me, I explain to owners, we can run an off-market process. I mean, I represent some interesting people where they want things done privately. And we always try to do things privately at the start. But if not successful, you know, let's yell it. You know, there's a sale that I did in Balmain about a year ago now. And it went for over 18 million. And at the time for where it was, you know, there's waterfronts going for 12. The buyer came out of Melbourne, right?
Wow.
He saw my video. He called me. I showed him on a Sunday. I did the deal the week after. You know, it's things like that, right? So
yeah.
That buyer would never, because I hadn't dealt with him before. I've never dealt with this buyer. So, you know, think about it. And I tell clients this all the time when they kind of want to go off market. It's like, you just don't know where your audience is going to come from. You really don't know. So you want to make sure, ideally, you haven't missed anyone, hence the on-market process. So to answer your question, do I do it? Yes, but there's more on-market than I do off-market.
Yep.
For sure.
In terms of the when you were talking about those 30, 40, 50 million dollar deals, are they more done off market, those bigger ones?
Look, the house that I'm selling, there's a house I'm selling now in Vaucluse. I sold that off market in the 30 plus, but on market now. There are things that we do off market, no doubt. And there's buyers for it. Look, you know, today I'm at a property, I've got three inspections lined up at a certain, probably be very careful what I say what the property is, but you know, keeping in mind, it's an off-market process at the present moment, right? Yeah. So depending on the price point, we do start quietly. I mean, look, the apartments on the market now, Horizon,
yep.
You know, Francesca Packets, we were off market at the start. And I'll be straight, I had an offer on that at 36 million.
Wow.
Okay, I'll tell you straight, I did.
Wow.
And I'm happy to speak about it openly because it was in writing, it was all kosher, lawyers made amendments. Unfortunately, didn't get there. Because at the time, because of a few things with FIRB and what have you. Now we're public, and we do have a guide of 32 million. But we started that off market. Yeah. So, you know, there's ways of doing it for sure. I mean, we had not, and that wasn't the only buyer on it, to be fair. So there are buyers for certain price points, if it's that special. But unfortunately, we didn't get there, subject to the situation. Now we are public. Mm-hmm. So we always do the stage, and that's what I call the stage one. I ran a stage one, which was off market, and we have the following because of the price points that we've dealt with before. We've got the B. I mean, you know, Billy sold the ANZ for 60 million, right? There's buyer pool, you know, and that's the death of our brand because we've got such big buyer pool in the top end. We've got the ability to go to that off market process, right?
Yep.
So it does occur, and it does. We do get offers for it, but if not successful, I won't sit and call it a quiet listing for too long. I put a deadline. I say, okay, this is the plan. We go off market for a certain amount of time. Right. Yep. If not successful, it's game time. Let's get it out there. I mean, the end goal is to sell, right?
Mm.
And most owners want to get it done yesterday. Mm. And let's call it how it is. How many times do you want to speak to your agent every day? Because I call my vendors every day. I'm known for it.
Yeah.
You know, at a point they're like, oh, you know, let's get this process. let's move on, you know. But saying that, I also find an on-market process is a lot more powerful than off-market. You know, some agents will breach the off-market process success, but in the back of my head, you know, it's like, but wasn't there someone else who would have paid more? That's how I think. Like, if I had an asset that I was taking to market tomorrow, I'd go public.
Yeah.
For sure. Yep. I want to know in the back of my head, you know, I hate that shoulda, coulda, woulda, but didn't. You know, you want to make sure, you want to make sure you've hit every box, I find.
You said that you called your clients every day. What happens on the days when there's nothing to talk about? What are you saying?
And you're calling them three times a day if they don't
answer? No. So if I don't get, the way I work, I'm talking about a new business or a buyer.
Okay.
So if I'm chasing a listing and I want that listing, I will call until I get. I had an interesting situation yesterday. Guy works in my team, Harry, joined me this year. Weapon, right? Came from project back end. There's a listing, and to his family, we're talking in excess of $19 to $20 million listing, which he's secured from his phone calling. Not me, his business. In my team, and he got me in, we had a presentation, we secured the business, let's move it. And there was a bit of a delay in response, sent the agency. So I said, you know, called once, he called twice. Didn't get an answer. I said, okay, next thing, what do you think I would say to do? What would David do? You'd get in the car. So he did it.
Got in the car.
Yeah, for sure. Because, look, I'm a big believer in, you know, sometimes things can change, you know.
Mm.
We're in an industry where people like to tell people what they want to hear. Now, I saw value at sort of circuit 18, 19 range. But all it takes is another agent to come in and say, look, I see value 25 to 30. What's going to happen?
Mm.
You know, they forget about David. Irrelevant how straight I am.
Yeah.
They're going to forget about me and go, you know, I might just meet with this agent that might have a buyer for 25 to 30. In that period of 24 hours, you could lose out. And that's how I think.
Mm.
So I'm big on call to act. So for me, if I'm not getting a hold of it, I want answers now. I want to know what's going on, right? Because it's also what I'm doing buyer work. If I've got a buyer on a property and you let them out of your sight and they look at something else, you could lose your buyer.
Yeah.
So to me, communication, but it's the rapport of the communication, right?
Mm.
Take out the... Like, what? Look, day to day, people don't like dealing with agents. True?
Correct.
True.
Right? But don't be that agent. Take yourself out of that picture.
You know, we spoke a few times, and I think when I noticed the way we spoke, and I don't think you really expected the rapport that I had with you. You know, I end up apologizing. I felt guilty that I canceled on you about twice.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of me sitting there how busy I am, it doesn't matter. I made a commitment, and I have to move that commitment because I had something else I had to do, right? I felt guilty. I rang you up and I apologized. And yeah, I was being strange.
While you were on your deathbed as
well. I was sick. I didn't sound so good. I was sick as a dog. Yes, I'm good old COVID. But I'm good now. But it's not the point. You won't forget that.
No, never.
Get me?
Yeah.
So that's just how I am. Mm. So for me, it's kind of like, you know, I speak to my owners because I want to. Mm. I form a rapport with my owners. You know, you're married to that vendor for the next 4 to 6 weeks. And that's how I run my business within the business. And that's what's allowed me to be consistent, you know, in that prestige market you guys like to talk about. You know, a lot of these people want to form a rapport.
Mm.
You know, they don't want to deal with the bullshit. They want to be able to ring you up and have straight conversations.
So is there a sales pitch in the listing appointment and stuff like that? Or is it just
look, it's quite interesting. And you probably see a movie a lot in this podcast. A lot of the business I secure would be majority. Also, look, there's track record there. Energy.
Yeah.
They feel it. Mm. They know. Mm. And owners want that.
Yeah.
Owners want to know that you're on. You know, I've got something I'm trying to sell at the present moment, and we're struggling. Right? The agent rang me yesterday and said, you know, there's vendors all through his ear, right? Mm. And I had a meeting with Reef, signed that for a new campaign in January. And he said, and I asked him the question, why did you stick with me? Because I appreciate loyalty. Mm. He said, Dave, I get calls from you at 6 a.m. because I said to you I'm awake at that time. I still get calls from you even though we're 2 months into the property. Yeah. It's like, dude, you still call me. Mm. That tells me you still want it.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of agents go wrong. I can't sell it. It's overpriced. Then don't back off. You entered into it. Mm. Finish the job.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, and that's where a lot of people buckle down and think, "I failed, I can't get there." No, go harder.
What if the price isn't achievable and the owner?
You tell them straight.
And so what if the owner doesn't budge?
People say pick your listings, pick your battles.
Yeah.
For sure, I'll be straight up taking on price overpriced stock. At times, you know, I see a different price, they see a different price. You know. But where I do, and I hold my strength on it, and this was the meeting I had with the owner on Tuesday, I told him a certain price point from day one. Mm. How I managed to secure that business says you were right. It's not an ego thing about being right or wrong, right? But wouldn't you rather know you've told the vendor something straight within reason? Say, look, day-to-day value, this is where it sits, but I'm going to do for you what I've done for others and show them the track record of what you've done. Show that you've achieved price points 20% over, 30% over. You've got to have the track record to sit there and do that. And I find where a lot of agents attend to, that they go in and tell owners what they want to hear, mm-hmm. right? And they spend more time crunching the vendor mm-hmm. than they actually do trying to find the buyer.
Mm.
Right? And that's where a lot of them, I think, the next generation are going wrong. And I'm still young. You know, I am the next generation coming through. But I find a lot of my competitors, and that's where I win the business off them, is because just be straight, just be real.
Are you quite often the lowest priced agent in the listing?
There's bigger players than me, much bigger, right? That I come up against.
I'm talking about lowest in terms of quoted price.
No. I come up with some pretty, you know, guys that have been in the game a long time that I respect, yeah. And they also come in, you know, sensibly as well, for sure. Okay. It's not every agent on the strip goes in overpriced, but there is a good fair share to go in and don't tell it how it is.
Yeah, okay. That's, what I've seen in my market is a lot of agents will agree to the price that the owner says, and then you're left with the crunch time.
But then it's the crunch, it's the conditioning. See, and that's where, like, pick where you want to be.
Yeah.
Pick what price point you want to deal in. You know, for me, my goal was always to have a wide range. You know, like Bill's done what he's done in the top end, and all respect, but I've always wanted to be a little bit different. I want to take on everything. You know, I look at it as a transaction. You know, I get obsessive about my processes. I get obsessive about my price points. I hate, and I hear it a bit, and it hurts. I hate when I hear and I just say, you don't deal at this price point when it's a $3 million listing. Like, that to me offends me.
How do you manage that?
I show them track record of stuff that I sold in that price point.
Yeah.
Right? You know, this game, and I don't get involved in that, you know, we only, that to me, no interest. You know, I love what I do. Mm. I love the process. Mm. I will take on anything, sure.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see my name attached to it. And, you know, there's many presentations and my, you know, and my competitors will go and slam, say, go open up the Wentworth Courier. And I'll open it up and there'll be consistency of pages. An average price point is 10, 8, or 20, or 1. And the vendors will come back and say, you know, you're out of your depth, right? As in, like, you don't handle this. And there's a way of squashing everything. And you always go, I always go prepared, you know? And I find that when you form that rapport with the owner and you speak to them every day and you show that owner from the point of you're chasing their business that you're calling them, automatically they go, wait a minute. Why does this guy want my business so badly, right? And that goes back to the 101, a 3-times call. If they don't get a hold, why are you calling me, David? Like, I'm talking AM, you know, midday, and then evening. And if I'm calling an owner at 8:30 at night, a quarter to nine, and it's a $2 million apartment, what does that tell you? I want it.
Mm. Yeah, so level of hunger doesn't matter.
Right?
Yeah.
If you don't have track record in that price point for somebody that doesn't, how do you get in and secure?
I'm always a big believer going with two. Go in with someone that has that track record.
Yeah. Okay.
Big on that.
That's great advice.
Big on that. Yeah. Never walk into... So I now think worst case. We're about to walk into a different market next year. Don't know what we're in for. I mean, let's go. The challenge is on. It's going to be interesting, right? But, you know, go in prepared. You know, so my business, one thing I love about the Highland model is there's no individual, right? It's all like... You go in as a team. I'm big on that. So if you look at all my campaigns, there's always three names to two. It's never just me. My signboards, there's two minimum. And that's probably me different to most of my competitors and directors. I advertise my staff. I get them involved in everything. You would rather three in a party than one, right? You know, the more, the more. And at an industry level, that's been acknowledged. People see that. And especially through the tough times, you know, they want to know they've got a team behind them. I mean, we still do caravans to this day.
Yeah.
Tuesday morning sales meeting, 8 a.m. After Tuesday, this whole office is out there doing a caravan.
Wow.
Not negotiable. Because as an owner, right, you want the service. You know, but that's our reputation we want out there, right? And these are the importance I learned from a young age. And so all I have simply done, I've kept it real. I haven't changed my process. I mean, yes, there's social media, but I'm also very cautious on social media. I mean, you've looked at my social media. I'm not the one standing in front of a property.
No.
It's just not me, right?
No.
It's about it's about the property I'm selling. It's not about David, right? And I think this is where the industry is changing a little bit. You know, people want to make it about them. And you know, owners want a sales agent. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Look, it works for some, and I respect that. But day to day, it's not for me. It's not how I roll, right? I want to promote the property. I want to push the property. And people spend more time thinking social media is going to get them that listing. What's going to get you that listing is picking up that phone and saying, I'm outside your house. I want to talk to you. Mm. You know, chase it. It's a chase game.
What are the tasks that you've continually stacked over time that you believe has had the biggest impact on your career over time?
Most definitely, as we keep on falling out, is my connects.
Yeah.
That's it. Phone calls, chase calls. Yeah. I keep it. You know, you look at the Alex Phillips of the world, right? Got time bound, I've known him a long time. I see him at 5 a.m. in the morning getting coffee. You know, we see... He's on the phone. I'm on the phone. We laugh about it. But look where he's at. You know, you look at the biggest performers. I mean, Bill at 69. You know, let's test it. Call him right now.
All right, let's do it.
Let's test it. Watch this.
This will be cool.
Let's test it.
Let's put him on.
Give it to you to answer.
Point made. I'm just in a podcast, Billy, and I'm just explaining about accessibility. On a scale of 1 to 10, how important is accessibility?
Accessibility? 10.
There you go. Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. By the way, that was on my phone as well. That wasn't David's.
But this is the simple stuff, guys. You know, that's someone that's 69 years old. Doesn't have to, but he wants to.
That's crazy. But
that's how we roll. That's what we enjoy doing, right? And that's where... And that's where I think, not I think, I know with our business and how we, and who we represent and how we represent, they know with us or they know with me, if you get a phone call, I'm gonna answer it. If I miss that call, you're gonna get a call back. So it's being on the phone, it's the follow-up, and it's about being accessible.
Yeah.
They're the three foundations for me, I'll never change.
Yeah.
Okay. Ever.
Okay.
Wow. I'm just, that's big. It's funny because we've interviewed people where the accessibility starts to shift to their associates or other team members. And it's, I can see the, I can feel the.
I mean, it's your name, right? Mm. It's my brand. And when I say my brand, I mean, David Miller's my name. It's my brand within the business. I mean, ideally, you know, you should be picking up the phone. You know, I should be making those phone calls. I mean, if you've got that leader in the team, I mean, I'm here every day. Mm. You know, I walk into this office, we've got music playing, it's energy, right? You've got to lead from the top. And I find if you're not making the calls, how can you start to make the calls?
So what's Harry, let's talk about your team.
Yep.
How do you structure your team? So you've got Harry, you've got Nat.
Yep.
Michelle.
So there's Michelle Brooks, been in the industry for 20 years. She is my left. She's attached to every property that I put to market as a tech. So like I said, there's always 2 to 3 on my ads, not negotiable, because accessibility.
Yep.
I always think worst case. Just imagine my phone break. That's how I think, right? If you're calling for it, you want a price, you get a price, you want it, you get it now. Mm. Why make people wait? Mm. Well, nothing worse, when you call an agent, I could call 5 right now in front of you. I wouldn't do it to them. And I guarantee they won't answer. Yeah. Right? It amazes me. I just don't get it. But the whole structure of my business is you've got the Michelle Brooks, who is my offsider, attached to every one of my properties. Yeah. Harry, his core role is really good with buy work, X projects, but also prospecting around just sold and just listed. So my agenda with Harry is I want to grow him to become an agent. And he's, I mean, like I said, he's been in the game now with me coming to say just over 6 months. He's just secured his first, he's secured, that's a lie, he's secured multiple, but his first big boy at 20 million.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's exciting stuff for that him, is. Right? But keeping it simple, doing the follow-up. It took him the 8th time to get in.
Wow.
Bang, in. And make it about them. You know, when I went there, this is where a lot of people go wrong. They don't take the guy that got them in the door. That was his win. And you make these guys feel that way, they're gonna keep on going. Where a lot of agents go wrong, they take charge, they take over, they make it about them. That's where there's failure.
Yeah.
Gotta make these guys hungry.
How long do you think someone should stay as an assistant before they go off on their own?
Look, it depends on the circumstance, right? You know, some guy could walk in, have the gift of the gab, get them rolling, get them out, get them going. You know, it just depends. You know, look, definitely if you're fresh meat and you're in the game, you need to be a part of a team minimum 2 years, for sure. Yeah. Minimum, right? Because you want to be attached to someone, learn the process, and then it becomes profile. So my agenda with Harry is I now will start putting him on boards.
Yeah.
But I'll put him on everything, you know? I'm seeing capability. I'm backing him. I can't wait. I'm so pumped next year to be putting him on all my stuff. I can't wait, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm seeing him grow. I'm seeing him chase. I'm seeing him doing buy work. He is capable to me. So, you know, then my next step is I give him profile. So what happens is if he's attached to stuff at 2 million, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, when he goes out on his own, his name's attached to this stuff. Mm. Already he's got confidence, he's got backup.
Mm.
More important, he's got credibility. Right?
Yeah.
And then it goes from there.
Wow.
Well, if you were to start over again in real estate, would you do anything different?
I would have got serious a lot earlier.
Serious a lot earlier.
Yeah. I think, because it's a long game, I think pick your battles and we will have fun, right? I mean, I'm 35 now. I feel my career properly sort of really taken off in the last 2 years more so, 2-3, and that just comes down to focus.
What changed? What flicked that switch in your head to go, okay, I'm going to take it really serious now?
Maturity. You wake up and you realize, all right, let's get real. You know, you create your own wealth. You create your own journey. You know, and I've always been a worker, always have fun, but no, prioritize. You know, get serious. So we never plan. You know, I would have planning, you know, before I'd never plan ahead. You know, I started a following, grew, and then my business, like, sort of 2 to 3 years, just started supercharging, right? And it's because my energy was focused and stopped sweating on the small stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, keep it simple, make those calls. The more calls you make, the more doors you get into. The more doors you get, the more opportunity, right? So it's just breaking it down. So to answer your question, what change it would have been maturity-wise, like, you know, hit reality, you know, I want to now really grow an empire. You know, you have that hit. Mm. When you have that hit, it's just nothing matters more than the focus towards your business.
Yeah. Did you have to change anything in your personal life to get to that
point? The weekends became smaller. No, I'm joking. I think it was more about prioritizing. You know, Saturday's a work day. Mm. You know, it's hot today, right? Most people want to go out, go relax. You know, you see agents, right? There's nothing that burns me more. Like, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, we'll finish and we have full days, right? We'll come back to the office and smash out that danger as a full day, you know? 4 years ago, if I only had, say, 3 or 4 opens on a Saturday, I'm done. I'm finished. Things like that. Now you realize there's only so much time in a day.
Mm.
Take advantage of it.
Yeah. So you work a lot harder now.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have a relationship or kids or anything in the pipeline?
Kids I would love. My mum's never going to be listening to this. look, I know one serious. I come from a big family, right? All my siblings are married with kids. You know, the Maloof family is not small, as you would know, but we're big on foundation of family. That to us is family is everything. Yes, my journey to see for sure have a family, but for me right now, my most important thing is setting myself up for that family. Am I ready to settle down? For sure. But to be straight, it's just right now it's just not on my
grind time.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a big look. Me and Dave, my business partner Highland, have a big vision ahead of us. And there's things happening in the pipeline that will come out next year, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a wealth goal?
For sure, man. I mean, look, you know, I've been lucky to see things in my life that people haven't.
Yeah.
So when you get a taste of something or you see it, you want it. There's only one way you're gonna get there if you can afford it.
Mm. But you're gonna have to afford it yourself.
So should I answer? Of course there is. Yeah. I always think big. That's just my personality. There's no, like, with me, it's black or white.
Mm.
You know, you ask most people that know me, there's no in between. So for me, do I want to get to the next level? 100%. But not just here, I want here. So it's just not going to stop until I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
How many coffees a day is it?
I've had, so my morning, I've got to back off them a little bit. So I'll wake up at 5, like 3 shots straight off the bat.
Wow.
And I'll come in after training, I'll have another coffee. I'll probably do 5 coffees a day minimum.
Yeah, wow.
But it doesn't affect me, just my personality as it is.
Do you find it hard to get to sleep?
It's funny, when I drop, I drop.
Yeah.
It's interesting, right? So when I put my head down, it's quite funny. I actually put the TV on, it's funny, right? Because I love people around me. It's so funny. So I'll have the TV on while I fall asleep.
Yeah.
For sure.
Love it.
Yeah.
Are you 6-7 days? 6 or 7?
I'm always around, for sure. I'm Monday to Saturday, and then the private's on a Sunday here and there. You want to see a house on a Sunday, I'm showing it to you.
Yeah. First, even a first-time inspection?
If you got the capacity. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I got contacted by so-and-so without getting into it. Very well known in the Australian world. Very. Mm. And my response was, I'll take it to you on a Sunday. But you know, for him, automatically, right, he's thinking, that's service.
Mm.
He's not going to forget that.
Yeah.
Because I'm building my career. I'm building my name still, right? So I'm going to prioritize on that. Sunday's an off day to some people. But to me, that's an opportunity to form rapport with this person to see me service him. It could be a salad, but more importantly, to remember my service on a Sunday, right?
How have you How have you formulated your mindset like this, where you just go, go, go? Do you listen to podcasts,
books? Look, I've always been go, go, go. Mm. Always. Always been go, go, go. Do I listen to podcasts? Look, I don't. Mm. Books? I'll answer your question. What do you think?
Nah.
Exactly. mate, look, there are people in the world. I mean, it's funny, like, you know, within Instagram, I look, there are things that I follow, right? Yeah. There's certain, so every morning when I'm up, I love watching the stuff. You watch people that are driven, what people do, and talk about that. There's a lot of that stuff that comes up, for sure, that I list, that I have no doubt. You know, I mean, I send it to my staff, I send it to my business partner. And, you know, it's funny, it's all about, you know, growth and reality and, you know, goals and achieving. And obviously, for me, you get a bit old and you realize, you know, life coaches and all these things that come in, because you actually want to understand, right, what's important and what's not. And some people do say that I speak to for advice, they say, Dave, you know, sometimes the work ethic can be so too much where you forget about your personal life.
Mm.
You live one life, and I get that, right? But my mentality is, you know, there's sometimes where I don't have to be here, but the problem is I actually want to be here.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, sometimes my immediate team's like, Dave, everything's done. I will leave and go home. I'm bored. Mm. I'll come back. Because I love activity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Wow. I love, it's, do you know what I mean? I enjoy it. Like, yep. I actually enjoy it that much.
Question, personal question, piece of advice for me.
Mm.
So in my core area of Kellyville, currently ranked number one.
Mm.
However, there's a section of the suburb with maybe 1,000 houses where they're all luxury homes.
Mm.
I haven't tapped into the market at all.
Mm-hmm.
I've only just recently, a few months ago, got my first listing in that pocket, and I've sold a few since.
However, in that pocket of that price point, you've just so you got your first listing, you've got a border. Is it on market or off market?
We've just sold three. So we've sold three.
In that patch.
In that patch. Unreal.
Love it. Yeah, yeah.
Now, the only problem is all my data is in other 7,000 houses where they're anywhere between 1.5 to 2.5. That's a 3+ pocket.
Mm.
What would you be doing if you were me? Would you still be putting all your focus on what I'm doing at the moment, because that's in the 7,000 house where it's producing, or would you start? How would you even?
You don't want to lose what you've created.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Never back off your bread and butter, right?
Mm.
But if you want to start to creep into that prestige, just split it up. You know, you've just done a sale, three sales in that prestige area, you're calling the press, correct?
Yeah.
You're saying that you're a different price point. Yeah. If I was you, I would be making sure every owner knows about your result.
Yeah.
Like, I would be door knocking those houses. Not your associates,
okay.
Not your assistant, you, because it's your face.
Yeah.
See, what I find, a lot of people, there's nothing worse when you rock up to a house and you're talking about, you know, say for example, say I worked for you. I knock on a door, have the conversation, are you aware of this sale? Now, at the end of the day, is your associate the listing agent or are you?
Me.
Right. So whose name's first?
Mine.
Right. So if I'm an owner
and
you're sending your assistant to door knock and tell me about your result, all due respect, I'm going to deal with you.
Yeah.
If you want my house, you come see me.
Mm.
So it's things like that. You know, a lot of people want to set up a pod where they don't have to work, put in the hours. I disagree. If you want to take on, certainly say, call it the prestige market, which you said you're in Kellyville, right? Yeah. Man, you have to be present.
Yeah.
You've got to go speak to these people face to face, because at the end of the day, they want to deal with you.
Mm.
And that's where a lot of people go wrong. They just think, send, door knock, you. I mean, It just gets, a lot of people appreciate it.
Yeah.
And then nothing better getting in front of people. Like for me, I'm not the one to listen. Like I love being in front of people. So vendor meetings, in front of people. Listing presentations, in front of people. You know, a result that's big, go door knock it.
Mm.
Keep it basic. Because with the new generation coming through, it's easier and more time productive. But everyone's old school still. You know, the people that own the big houses or the stuff that you want to do, dude, they're still in their way.
Mm.
So they're going to respond in their way. You got to remember that. Adapt to them. They're not going to adapt to us. I mean, at the end of the day, they got the asset. I got something, you know, that I want from, you know. It's not the other way around, right? Mm. So you've got to go above and beyond.
Yep.
You got to over-service it.
If you were a buyer's agent, so I'm a buyer's agent, have my own business, I've not bought a $20 million property, how would you go about finding a client to buy a $20 million property, would you try and get another buyer's agent?
So what I tend to do, look, you know, I've got, there's a few buyer's agents I deal with. What's smart is, look, I'm very careful who I refer. So if I refer someone, I want to make sure the person I refer I know is going to serve the way I do or have the reputation, right? So there's a few buyer's agents I refer because their word's their word and they do what they do. So for example, for yourself, I mean, I'm not in that buyer's agent space. I know it's very similar. So if I was you, I'd be contacting the core performers in your patch. Form a rapport with them. Become their friend. Hang out with them. Make the effort. Don't make it a 9-to-5. Because if you start forming a friendship with this person, this bond, right? If they like you, they're going to refer you. Do you have any buyer's agents call me a week, hey Dave, can I have your books? No. I mean, I know you, but I don't know you that well. That's my reputation, because you're going to use my name to get in that door. So ideally, if I was in your position, let's just say I changed the game. I wanted to be with the buyer's agent, right? I would form a rapport with the strongest performers in that area.
Agents.
Become their friend, hang out with them. You know, I'm not saying it's gender driven, but if you're really hungry and you want to align yourself, right? Well, you want to become a friend with someone you do business with, right? And if you click with them, you click with them. If you don't, move on. But create that family with the top performer. So therefore, dude, they're just going to send you business. But I find a lot of people just want to start calling books and offering their services. But you're going to get nowhere, right? It's what people say about you. My, like, half of my business is, I mean, it's a mixture. I mean, look, you got to call in, meet chasing, but also referral. I get so much referral business because, you know, there's nothing better when someone says, you've got to use this guy. You know, you're not having to fight over fee. I mean, how cool is signing up something when you've been referred in? Fee conversation lasts 2 seconds, right? Bang, bang. They don't question it because they know what they're going to get.
Yeah, it's the best.
For sure.
Easy.
Yeah.
One last question I have for you would be, what would be your best piece of or top advice for an agent coming through the ranks?
I think, look, be straight, work, know your market, be knowledgeable, be accessible. Outwork your competitor. And I mean that.
Yeah.
Find your strengths, own it, but give it 100%.
Yeah.
And it takes time, but work. If you work hard, it's such a simple formula to do. If you work hard, no matter what, it pulls off.
You know what I've loved about this? The whole podcast, what I've come to realize about you is this whole reputation that you've built, brand that you've built, I think a lot of people from the outside looking in kind of would think that, we're riding on the coattails, but...
For sure, yeah.
It's all hard work.
Yeah.
It's been built on hard fucking work.
You know, I'll make you laugh, right? At the start, you know, a lot of people thought I got spoon-fed. Listen, if you've met, he's one of the hardest soldiers you've ever met, right? Trust me. Typical, like, ex-publican, you know, blur, and he's just, the stories he's got, right? He's tough. Yeah. He was tough on me. I mean, like, the stories I've got for you, not online, but, you know, he's tough. But he made me, like, I've always got it in me, but he's made me that hustler, you know? And that's the thing, right? A lot of people kind of thought I got spoon-fed, and then when people realized I didn't, you know, and that's for me also wanted to prove a point. My name's David. I'm not Bilson.
Yeah.
And that's been a part of the, you know, the hunger, because we're competitive. You know, it's funny. We go head-to-head, right? It's like, it's quite funny. Like, last year, like, he was, I had him, right? He comes in and does his one thumper. It's just like...
What do you do?
You know what I mean? Just like, but it's a competitive. But, I mean... You know, that's the thing, and it's the work ethic. I mean, look, you just saw that. I mean, look, that wasn't pre-framed. As you know, you called off your phone, right? Yeah. Answer. Third, you know, ring, boom. And that's what it's about, you know, and that's been drilled into me, and that's what's gotten to me where I am. You know, it's the hard work, it's the work ethic, it's the follow-up, it's the chase.
Yeah.
Dude, of course it's hard, but, you know, you either have it or you don't. And if you do, this is the game for you.
Yeah. You're a legend.
Fuck, man, that was phenomenal. What's your biggest sale and biggest names you've dealt with? This will just go off on the reels.
out of respect to the client base, I mean, look, I'm,
you know.
If you had to say a name, hypothetically.
Well, look, you know, I'm representing the Packers at the moment.
Yeah, massive.
You know. Huge. You know, but there's a friendship there and there's a trust. I've represented some pretty interesting people in my time. But, you know, can I tell you, and that's also just something we haven't touched on, that's also been a part of my success. If someone wants something kept out of the media, I do it.
Mm.
And that's also one thing I probably has had a really big impact to allow me to get to the top end is, well, that prestige market is owners trust me. You know, I've done stuff that no one knows about. And the death that's got has been phenomenal because every agent is, you know, unfortunately so worried about them and their ego, they can't wait to spill it, right? We're different. Bill, I mean, there's stuff that goes on no one knows about, right? But that's advice I was given at a young student. The client base you want to end up with, if they don't want something in the media, you don't.
Yeah.
And respect that.
So in terms of the, like your biggest sale, is that public knowledge?
Look, I can tell you in excess of 40 plus, yes.
Yeah.
In the 40 to 50 mil range.
What do you do with that money?
give
us something fun to work with.
Look, I tell you guys, I enjoy life. Yeah. That's for sure, right? I definitely enjoy life.
Favorite car?
Look, the car that I've got now is a car that I'm happy with.
Was it the Porsche?
No. What's with the Porsche? Is it that every age has a Porsche? I don't. But look, there's a car that I do have that I love, but that's my business, very humble way. Like, that's something I don't want to really get into. All good, so. We've got a meeting.
David is out. Thank you.
That's a wrap.